Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. Welcome back to AI and the Future of Work. This is your host, Dan Turchin, advisor at Insight Finder, the system of intelligence for IT operations, and CEO of PeopleRain, the AI platform for IT and HR employee service. As you know, each week we share conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, investors, and journalists who are defining how we'll live and work for, say, the next 30 years. We've been discussing some heady topics recently: ethical dilemmas posed by AI, how governments are being replaced by tech companies, how digitalism is replacing liberalism as the dominant paradigm for discourse. These are all critical topics, but they're a little abstract. Today, we're going to discuss how these changes are impacting employees and the technology they use at work. Jason Woyan has been helping enterprise customers make use of technology for large companies like IBM and small companies that became large for the past 25 or so years. He and his teams have directly or indirectly helped millions of employees be more productive. In February, Jason became CEO of Thirdera, the largest pure play provider of services dedicated to the ServiceNow community. Thirdera is breaking all the rules and building a global brand, formed by combining a group of regional ServiceNow partners. Listen to how Jason thinks about leadership, innovation, and creating opportunities in a very competitive landscape. Without further ado, Jason, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the podcast. Let's get started by having you share a little bit about your background and how you got into the space.
Gosh, thanks, Dan. That was really nice. I'm going to have to replay that later, just maybe in front of my wife or my kids to let them know that I really do this stuff for a living. This is very kind of you. And thanks for inviting me to your podcast. This is a really fun, and I'm really excited to see kind of what comes out of this. Let's see, me. I spent 11 years at IBM, a variety of roles, IT services, mostly focused on outsourcing, digital transformation. Sometimes we call that taking somebody's mess and delivering it for less. You know, we would have never put that in a sales pitch, but it was really about bringing, I'll say, big tier processes and better systems and tools to bear for customers and really helping them transform to a more efficient way of delivering their IT services. So a lot of transformation, a lot of transition work, clearly led several of our major accounts there as well. It was a really great experience for me. I decided it was time for me to do other things, however, and I had a really good friend who was actually just wrapping up an assignment in Asia Pacific and moving back to the United States and had been doing a lot of Peregrine implementations. Obviously, there was a bit of a connectivity there with Fred and Rod Luddy at the time. And from there, had a few phone calls and conversations, and we decided we should go build this thing called a ServiceNow consultancy. That was Navigus back in the day, one of the first ServiceNow partners in the ecosystem, kind of 2009, 2010. It was a great opportunity to go in and just help clients do things that they thought was going to be impossible in some cases or very challenging to do. It was really a great opportunity to just see a lot of different clients coming from a lot of different spaces or places and bring some of the skill that I had in transition and transformation and the ServiceNow platform to bear in kind of an end-to-end way. It was a really great experience. Frank Slootman joined ServiceNow. We watched ServiceNow accelerate quite dramatically with that assignment. We realized that we needed to likely attract more capital or more funding in an effort to stay relevant in the ecosystem, and decided for us moving to a company called Cloud Sherpas, which was a VC-backed effort, cloud services brokerage. Had a Salesforce business unit, a Google business unit, and a ServiceNow business unit. We became a ServiceNow business unit. I was the president of the ServiceNow business unit there. We continued to grow quite aggressively with the market opportunity, really helping clients, again, just achieve more in ServiceNow. And then at the end of 2015, Cloud Sherpas was acquired by Accenture. I was the senior MD responsible for a ServiceNow capability at Accenture for the next four and a half years. And really took that opportunity and had a great team around me. We were able to really scale that up to the single largest ServiceNow consultancy in the world. I left Accenture, did some work for a small SAP to AWS consultancy for a bit, but my passion was really back in the ServiceNow ecosystem. I had registered a domain name, thirdera.com, and I'd been talking to my biggest competitor at the time, a gentleman named Mark Toludo, who founded Fruition Partners. And, you know, we started riffing on this notion of third era. And for us, third era is, it's the third era of technology, mainframe, distributed client, now cloud. IT is in its third era. The first era was about making data digital. Second era was about bringing rationality to that now digital data. And the third era is really about making that digital now rational data intelligent. And we couldn't help but observe that it was also, in our opinion, time for a third era of partner in the ServiceNow ecosystem. First era were small companies, not a lot of people remember anymore, but were able to quickly pivot and attract and start to build ServiceNow skills. The second era, that was Navigus for me. The second era was about scaling those skills through VC or GSI backed endeavors. That was Cloud Sherpas and Accenture for me. And I think the third era is really about value and attracting scale in the establishment of value. You know, ServiceNow is a very broad platform. There's many different things that it can do by workflow, by product. You have to be a sizable company with significant skills to really be effective across the breadth of ServiceNow. And you know, we really kind of established ourselves as, wouldn't it be great if we could take the focus and the relevance and the customer intimacy that comes with those regional partners and combine that with scale, a global capability and investments to really help us to deliver that value to clients at scale. And that's really what third era is. For us, everything is an ambitional state, kind of forward-looking, and really seeking to elevate every interaction we're making with our clients. We want to be the preeminent value-based customer, or value-based provider to our customers. And that's their measurement, not ours. And we want to be a fun and exciting place to work where people can do their best work. So that's a little bit of how we got here.
You mentioned Raw Bloody. I recall when I hired into ServiceNow, probably around when Navigus was getting started, Raw Bloody led my employee onboarding. There were only then, you know, maybe I think four of us in my onboarding class. That was, you know, everyone that was being onboarded that month. There were less than 100 customers, and there was essentially, you know, a nascent but non-existent VAR ecosystem. You mentioned Toludo. Toludo actually was on this podcast in 2019. I'd encourage everyone to go dig up the Toludo episode in the archives. But there was Toludo and Fruition, and there was you and Navigus and a few others. Well, fast forward to 2021, it's so crowded. There are hundreds of partners, many of whom are VARs. And you're crazy enough to launch a VAR for ServiceNow into this environment. Where is there room for differentiation?
Oh, there's tremendous room for differentiation. It is so hard to really conceive the opportunity for ServiceNow. I know you understand it, Dan. The reality is that there's just not enough scale partners with depth of skill that are out there really pushing the boundaries of what's possible with ServiceNow, that are seeking to stay, you know, intelligently aligned with customers and where they're at in their journey, seeking to stay intelligently aligned with ServiceNow. And really have the ability to continue to scale, right? If it was just you know, Mark when he was starting Fruition kind of back in the day, that would have been tough. Navigus, same sort of story. You know, the ecosystem has changed. You have to have capital, and it is a capital intensive effort to really make good on that, to bring that scale to bear in a rapid way. But I kind of look at it and I say, well, I got 12 years in the ecosystem, 13 next month. You know, that 12 years was a really good trial in what works and what doesn't work. I learned as much of what not to do over the last 12 years as I think I learned to do. And, this has been a really interesting place for us to just kind of bring, again, that more ambitional state. You know, we want customers to see the potential in the future. We want to be at the tip of the spear of taking those hard kind of obscure or things that seem difficult or challenging. And we want to be the ones that kind of help bring that right sized and proportionately and practically into a customer's system and help them evolve. Being good doesn't necessarily mean being complex, and being complex doesn't necessarily mean being good. So bringing those two vector points together in a practical way you know, is a big part of what we do. And we've gotten a very warm reception in the ecosystem. You know, we've had the good ability to have, you know, some clients through the acquisitions we've done that have kind of made the transition with us. And so, you know, we're continuing to kind of test our hypotheses and our theses on them and work with them to unlock, you know, better futures in ServiceNow and understand what they need more of or what they may be looking for less of in their partner. And so, you know, it's a kind of that trial-based approach and mindset that I think is really allowing us to accelerate. And, you know, I think there's really a desire to want to have scale, but focused partners, you know, in a customer stable to help with that rationalization. The platform moves so quickly. At a minimum, we have to learn twice a year for every release. But if we're only learning twice a year, we're not learning fast enough. That takes an engine. That takes scale, you know, that takes focus. And, you know, you'd be surprised there aren't as many partners out there with that sort of DNA as you might expect.
I love our one-on-one conversations, but I equally love seeing you holding court in front of your team. Talk to us about your leadership style.
My style, let's see. You know, for me, you know, I spend a lot of time kind of watching others, and I had a very good opportunity to have worked with several really great leaders. And, you know, I've shamelessly kind of stolen the things that I saw that worked from them over time. I take my job very seriously, but I don't take myself very seriously. You know, we try to fight entitlements in our organization because that's kind of at the root of all politics. That's at the root of not being agile or staying customer focused. For me, the organization, and I think most of our team, is really looking at things as it's a continual evolution. There is no destination. It's, you know, technology does not give you that moment to get comfortable, or at least you shouldn't give yourself that moment to get comfortable in technology, because it's always compounding, as you know. And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's about staying agile and trying not to, you know, convince yourself that one recipe is the right recipe, and finding different styles and different approaches for different situations to keep things contextual for people. Deming once said data without context is meaningless. Well, services businesses without context tend to be rudderless. And so I think, you know, I spend an awful lot of time just talking to our team. In fact, one of the things that I continually hear from people in my organization is they're surprised at the number of one-on-one meetings I do. It's something I've always done. I did this at IBM. I really think it's important to be conversant in the organization. As you go remote, we've been working remotely, you know, for the last 12, 13 years, primarily with customers on site and then, you know, in remote locations, you know, in their ServiceNow businesses. You have to drop by the office. You have to walk by the desk. You have to bump into each other at the water cooler. And when you can't do that physically, then you have to do it virtually. So it's a big priority for me to make sure that we're kind of trying to blow up the hierarchy, stay out of the 1990s style of management where you can't talk to me and I can't talk to you unless we've talked to, you know, two levels of management between us. I want the entire team to go to the place they need to go to get the answer they need in the most expedient fashion. Very often that's going to be my desk, and it should be others as well. And there should be no reason to feel protective of that. That's just us all working together to try to make this as friction-free of an environment as we can and to add value for our clients. And so, you know, that's a contact sport where we have to be contacting each other. So we do an awful lot of that. And I would say as far as styles go, it's kind of all styles. Like, you know, I don't think, you know, as I look at my team, and I have a great team, one of the best teams I've ever been able to work with. The amount that we've gotten done in the time we've gotten it done has been staggering to me. But I look at, you know, everybody's coming at it from the best intentions. You know, we don't have an environment where people are assuming the worst. They're tending to assume the best. And when something doesn't go quite the way we expect, everybody's just rolling up their sleeves and trying to get to work to make that thing better. And, you know, that's a lot to work with. And as long as you keep talking to the teams, as long as you keep working and listening as much as you're advocating or talking about what we aspire to be and getting that continual feedback, you know, that's the most important part in any organization, in my opinion, is just dialogue and context and, you know, seeking to always try to gain those micro alignments on vision versus strategy versus execution.
How do you think about the role that innovation and new technologies, AI or otherwise, will play in this kind of third era of work that you envision?
You know, I think one of the things that I have observed that's kind of missing in the ecosystem, and I would say across technology, is oftentimes, you know, you see innovation touted as a report or, you know, an assessment or something like that, or some sort of workshop. And that's that is not the way I think about it. I think of innovation as an agenda. I think of something that needs to persist and be refined over time. Just as great ideas tend to not be perfect the first moment, they tend to be, you know, you have the idea, you share, you refine, and over time you come up with something that's, you know, maybe better than you could have come up with initially. I think innovation is the same way. Innovation has to be right-sized to where the customer is. I mentioned context before. Innovation without context is meaningless too, right? If you have to meet your clients and your teams where they're at, and innovation begins from there. It doesn't begin from some abstract, you know, here's something 20 years from now. That's really hard to conceptualize. That's not to say people shouldn't be thinking about those things. Of course, people should be thinking about those things. But as you're bringing, you know, innovation to a client, or trying to do innovative things with a client, or in a business circumstance, it's usually not a 20-year business cycle that you're talking about. And so when I talk about context, that's a context I mean. When is time to value for this? You know, what is the right recipe to really help this be rationalized over time? What would good look like today, a year from now, 2 years from now, sort of thing? And are we on the right trajectory? You know, you can guarantee things are going to continually change in that time frame. And so you have to continually adapt, which is, again, why innovation has to be a persistent agenda that is just something that's looked at over time. And then the last thing that I see a lot, and I kind of almost look at it as like we're in a technical renaissance right now. We have more tools, we have more capabilities, we have more of everything than we've ever had in technology. And it's easier, faster, and more affordable to use than it's ever been before. And so I think as well, a really important thing is the willing to trial, to error, to explore is a really, really important thing. You know, there's never been a safer time to get out there and really experiment and, you know, see what that might mean. One thing I know is that we always learn more from doing. And I think, you know, you unlock opportunities to innovate through doing as well. And so as I'm sitting down with clients, I tend to talk about innovation as an agenda. Certainly we need to do briefings on futures of and those types of things, because that sparks, you know, some organic thinking about the possibilities. But then you have to get right down to, okay, well, how do we make some of those things practical? What are some things we could try? What are some things we could do that might better inform what those best things are to do next for you based on where you are and what you would define as innovative? So I think that's the piece we wrestle with a lot. And as I think about innovation in third era, it's an agenda. It's a persistent agenda that we're developing over time with a client.
I know you've done a great job of empowering your teams to have these future of conversations with prospects and clients. And that's really a different conversation than you've had historically when you're selling traditional services. As you're having these conversations, what do you think is one technology that will be commonplace in the large enterprise, say in 5 years, maybe not even 10 or 20, but just 5 years, that today might seem like science fiction?
Well, I mean, you have to go to AI, RPA, ML. You have to go there, right? You just have to. You know, Dan, in the context of the work you and I have been doing together, I've been just amazed. And I know we didn't talk about this, so I've just been amazed at what your firm is able to do in the context of very focused AI. It's really educated me on, you know, I thought I knew a lot about this space, and I definitely am smarter now than I was before having us really spend some time on it. But when you can take a space that has been literally commoditizing seconds out of the system for 20 plus years, and you can turn on this piece of technology and suddenly you're in double digit percentage improvement near overnight, I mean, it really shows you the possibility. And, you know, AI never tires, right? It's always on. It's always learning. It's got the ability, if pointed in the right way, and used in a very focused and practical way to really unlock tremendous value. And I knew there was, intuitively knew there was a lot of opportunity for improvement. I did, but until you and I really started kind of looking at what you've been up to over the last many years, I have to say I'm shocked. And having come from a place where we did an awful lot of help desk outsourcing and call center outsourcing, and you know, we back 20 years ago, we thought we were pretty good at some of these things, and you know, VRU based efforts and call deflection based efforts, and knowing that for 20 years people have been working on only doing more and more and more of that. And now you see technology working on it and immediately kind of flipping it on its ear and being more, far more efficient than those humans have been over time. It just really shows you the power. And, you know, it's the little things. It's the little things that you see. You're like, huh, I didn't expect to see that. I didn't expect to see, you know, autonomously driven cars sitting in garages, you know, out there. And the fact that we're just in such early stages of really seeing those things advance is inspiring to me, and is no question, you know, that's where things are going. This human plus machine kind of mentality is where we all need to go. Now we need to do that ethically, and we need to do it smartly, and we need to be clear about, you know, general approaches to these versus very specific approaches to AI and things of that nature. But man, there's a tremendous opportunity there. And you know, you're far more qualified than I am to explain it. But, you know, I look at it and I go, this is if we are in early innings of cloud, you know, we haven't even dressed for the field yet in AI. But that curve is going to move infinitely faster than the cloud curve did. And that curve was obviously infinite faster than the curve before that. So this compounding effect is, for me, it's just a really exciting time to be in technology. I mean what I said when I said there's been no better time to do these things, right? The amount of compute and capabilities we have at our fingertips is amazing. And again, it's only going to continue to compound.
In the past, we've celebrated years when maybe as a CIO, you'd achieve a 4 to 6% improvement in MTTR or call volume reduction just by brute forcing it, right? And now with modern technologies, you know, we're looking at customers that are reducing their MTTR 60% or, you know, autonomously deflecting, you know, 65 or 70% of their calls. It's unheard of, you know, and the key thing, you made this point, but I want to double down on it, is that it is not about replacing humans with machines. It's about the fusion of machine intelligence with human intelligence. To that point, we both have young kids, and we're coaching them about how to go and make a dent in the universe in their careers. What are the skills that they should be investing in now that will be future-proof?
Wow, my kids would hate to hear me answer this question because I might get on a soapbox about it from time to time. And if you've taken it down to our local school as well. But, you know, I think being e-lingual is as important as being bilingual, right? You know, being as fluent with computer language and capabilities is, in my mind, one of those future ready skills that's as important as being able to communicate, you know, in a bilingual way. And I think there should be opportunities for younger people to be able to bias themselves that way if they so desire. There are a lot of great classes out there to help people learn things, right? There's a great access to information, but if you really look at, you know, a systematic curriculum-based way of learning and treating, you know, electronic means of communication, electronic means of working, and it looked at those as important as some of the other foundational things that a young person should know and could know to be a better human, to be better in society, and to be able to contribute. There's no question technology needs to be a core pillar of that. And I think that's an area where school systems could really stand to double down themselves, right?
While we're on the topic of giving advice, what's your advice for a younger version of yourself, maybe when you were your kid's age?
I underestimated how much time I actually had to do things that I thought were important. That's one of the things that I just continue to do today. In fact, you know, there's an urgency of time. So when I was younger, I thought I had a lot more time than I actually do to impact the changes I want to impact. So I would say that. I would say, I think early in my career, I underestimated being in the room where people were doing interesting things and really being entrepreneurial or being futuristic or, you know, those types of folks. I think I undervalued how important it was to find people that you could really really resonated with you, that were kind of where you wanted to be, and to be in those rooms and understand how those people work, and to apprentice in that kind of model, I think is really, really important. And then the last is, I think the human mind does a really bad job of calculating risk. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, it's you know, taking personal risks. I'm not talking about taking risks with, you know, clients or personal data or things like that, but, you know, that ambition you have, that passion you've got to create something. Oftentimes you can put those on the wayside because you're like, no, I you know, that's too risky. It's too risky for me to do that. In fact, Dan, you're kind of a serial entrepreneur when you get down to it. So you might understand this, or I'm sure you do. It's not as risky as you think it is. You know, working on something that you're passionate about, that you think you can see clearly and you see the potential on, is something that is not as tiring as working on somebody else's agenda. And the risk of that is that you have the opportunity to be great. And so that's something that I think early in my career, I kind of missed. I always was a little nervous about making big changes in my career. And now I'm the guy that says, hey, the big changes make themselves. Don't worry about that so much. You know, don't try to oversteer that. Those big changes will reveal themselves to you. Those big decisions will reveal themselves to you at the rate that you're willing to accept them. And, you know, just have a passion, have an interest, be curious, and take the opportunity to learn and find where you contribute within them.
So Jason, feels like we're just getting started, but I got to get you off the hot seat, but not without one last question. So Third Era brand had a rather unique launch. We met some celebrities like Hasselhoff and that guy, Bob Saget. Via cameos. Talk to us a little bit about the culture at Third Era and just, you know, how you ended up having some fun with the launch.
Well, you know, you'll hear us say something a lot internally, and it's like, we're just trying to make a company we want to work for. I mean, it is really just that simple. I know that sounds silly, but we were just, in fact, it was kind of funny. We were just looking at a branding box. We'll be sending all of our new clients. We'll get an onboarding box. And while that's just a very simple thing to do, of course, we obsessed about what was in the box. And I remember there was a point in time where I just looked at the individual working with it, and I said, is this a box you want to receive? And they're like, I'm like, well, that's not the right answer. So come back with the, I'm so excited, I need to get this box into my house tomorrow sort of thing. So we're just really trying to create a company we all want to work for. And it goes with that kind of culture of take your work really seriously, but don't take yourself. We got to have fun. We got to take care of each other in the process. We'll have days where we're grinding really hard, but we should have days where we're kind of keeping things a little lighter as well. Energy is infectious. And, you know, that's one thing that I spend a lot of time on, is just trying to bring my best energy, not to sound cheesy, but my best energy to my day. Cause I want to do my best work, and I want people I'm working with to be having a good time and feeling like they can as well. You know, we take times to do some things that sounds kind of silly at first. Like I do round tables quite often, and we have a DJ John Ray, you know, John Reynolds. And so, you know, he DJs it, and, you know, we got a little club music playing in the background. We got playlists out on Spotify. You know, we're just doing any little thing we can to, you know, make the day a little lighter for somebody, or, you know, put a little edge to it in a good way is something we're going to do. So.
I can't believe I missed an opportunity to have John Reynolds DJ this, this podcast.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Absolutely. So, that sounds like you're going to promise me you're going to come back, right?
Absolutely. I'd love to. This has been a lot of fun. You know, I can maybe next time we could do it on a patio someplace. You know, that would be fun.
With a cocktail in one hand and out in the open air. I'd love that. Sooner the better, my man.
That'd be awesome.
All right. This has been great. We got to let you go for now. But Jason, thanks so much for coming by.
Dan, thanks so much. Appreciate all you're doing to just put, you know, a really positive positivity out there with the work that you're doing at People Rain and so many others. I've listened to a lot of the episodes of the podcast, and you know, you're tackling some really tough topics, and I think you're doing it in a way that's quite practical and is accessible. And I think that's just a huge part of PeopleRain too, is just the accessibility of what you're doing. So can't say enough thank you for you for having a passion, seeing other people have similar passions and bringing those things together. You know, it's not easy to create these podcasts on a regular basis like that, and you have to stay with it over time. And the fact that you have is a credit to you. And, you know, those are things that will never, you'll never really see the full impact of them, but they're having a massive impact out there. So thank you for just being a positive part of the ecosystem as well.
My pleasure. Thank you for saying that. Certainly a labor of love. Much continued success to you and, of course, the Third Era team. That's a wrap for this week. Dan Turchin, your host of AI and the Future of Work. Back next week with another fascinating guest.